I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably be lost for words.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lost for Words podcast. Slightly different schedule this week. So Brad is off this week. His nephew has just come into the world, so he's having a week off to enjoy that. So congratulations to him. Matt Vincenzi. Matt is with us. Matt, as you know, always covers DraftKings with us. We then talk a little bit of betting and we talk just catching up on golf in general. And we thought we'd roll that all into one episode this week, rather than trying to do two shows and then get other people involved. Let's just do the one show, cover all the stuff we want to cover. And it's a good way to do that, Matt, with the RBC Heritage.
Yeah, sounds like a good time. I like talking about it all anyway. We kind of do that as it is. So I think it's perfect.
Yeah, works well. Matt, I think we were on hole 8 on Sunday of the Masters when Scotty Scheffler was on hole 8. Of the Masters, in for potentially one of the best final rounds ever. And in about 2 minutes and 23 seconds, everyone shit the bed and it was all over. What were your thoughts going into that final? Did you just think it was Scottie Scheffler's to win going into Sunday?
I didn't think that was the case. I thought he probably would, but I kind of thought it was between him, Homa, and Oberg. I thought those are the three guys who really had a chance. I never thought Colin did. I thought he kind of faked his way to where he was that week, because you don't get to go into the Masters with the type of form that he was in and win it. So I thought he'd fall off eventually.
So it's interesting because I just thought he's the guy. Like, I thought Hubert would finally realize it was his first major. I think Homa was sort of in and out of form and sort of really convinced me of anything. And I just felt, you know, Morikawa's the one out of all the chasers that's been there, done it a couple of times, somehow found his irons in, you know, space of a couple of days. And once he gets there, he kind of stays there. But he was the one that really lost it in the end. And maybe that's the pressure of playing and watching Scotty do what Scotty does. The whole of Ludwig was unbelievable. I think when you look at it, it was putting a lot of it, right? Not to take away from obviously an incredible performance. A lot of it was putting. But that's amazing, right? Like to nail those kind of putts in that contention. But the biggest thing that stood out for me was how he responded to 11. Like to go and do what he did on 11, Matt, and then go to 12, which is such a dangerous hole, and just kind of, you know, carry on playing well from there is, I think, really impressive.
Yeah, I think that was probably the first time that I can remember where I've watched a performance of a player that I didn't have any money on that made me sexually aroused. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Does that to you, doesn't he? But is that just because you've always got Adam Scott?
Yeah, Adam Scott does that as well, but not because of his golf performances recently. But I mean, with the way Oberg played, I mean, it was unbelievable. He's just such a perfect swing. Like, you know, everyone makes the reference, he's built in a lab, but it really does seem that way. The pressure didn't seem to get to him. Even after he made a mistake, like you just mentioned, he bounced back. I just thought that was his arrival notice to the world.
So we've been back and forth in the middle of it, haven't we? Since, I guess, the start of his PGA Tour career, right? Like, sort of saying, is he being overhyped? Is he being overrated? Is he, you know, winning when he can, not being consistent enough? At the start of the year, he was quite slow, and maybe we thought the fun was going to stop, and then he just does this, and it's like, okay, he's gone, you know, fourth and tenth, and then plays great in the Masters. Eighth and second, and then goes into Masters. I just think that I don't know what it is with him. Like, is he going to be John Rahm? Is that what?
Yeah, I think something like that. I mean, he reminds me almost like Rory. I mean, Rory, when he came on the scene, was a lot younger. Yeah. But like he started winning a couple majors. It wouldn't shock me if Oberg was able to do that.
But this is the thing, right? Like, how many did Rory win? 4 or 5 in the space of a couple of years, strange? Like 3 years? And we've seen how much he struggled, right? I mean, we're coming up to 10 years now, you know, since the last one. You don't wish that on anybody, I don't think. You don't want that from anyone. He just, you look at him and you just think he's just so built for just success all the time. I know we've kind of spoken about, you know, does he just keep getting it done in these events? I mean, it was second at Pebble Beach. I think the real telling point of him is I think he would have won Pebble Beach if that went to Sunday. I think that's probably the first thing I would say. He then finishes eighth at Bay Hill. We had one round that kind of took him out of the out of form there. In Texas, he was 14th. Like, it seems to be like 25th is like a bad result for him.
Yeah, like, it's just, his four is just really high.
He's not quite Scheffler yet, but no one is. I guess the winds have got to come. Do you think he can just go, I guess, straight off the bat? Do you think he can just come in straight away and this week and carry on in the same vein? Or do you think he'll struggle?
I don't think he'll struggle. I think a lot of, I'm not interested in the guys who shot meaningful shots on Sunday at Augusta. I think it's a good spot to fade them. But I think he's super live to win the PGA.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting you mentioned a point about people that hit meaningful shots on Sunday. I feel like that's changed a little bit. And I think, like, when you look over the years, it's been one of these, like, either they've missed the cut of the Masters or they haven't played the Masters before winning here or whatever. Like, Rahm was 15th last year. Fitz had played well, I think, pretty much in the Masters the week before. Sungjae, I would have thought, would have played decently. Like, I think the tide changes when it becomes one of these 70-man field signature events.
Right. I don't want, so that's, yeah. I mean, I think you're right, but I like the guys who played well, but not too well.
Yeah. No, I've done that. Like, that's, I've done that naturally just because of the odds, I think. I think if I was ever going to take anyone at the top of this range, it would have been Ludvig.
Yeah, me too.
Because I just think he's had 2 seconds already now this season or this year. And it just feels like the wind's coming. I think he's someone to be buoyed by something. He never, the smile never left his face. Like, Morikawa, yeah, devastated. Homer talked about just getting hammered after finishing third of the Masters. Like, I think he's just going to go and carry on, right? There's that take. Scheffler, unbelievable. To live up to that, going in 4-1 and just do what he did. Really, really good. Ruined Masters Sunday, I think, but in the nicest possible way. Like, to watch someone of that caliber just do what he did is incredible. Biggest disappointments, not necessarily personally for us in terms of betting perspectives, but the biggest disappointment for you at Augusta last week?
Oh, man. I think I was disappointed as a whole by Liv players. I think there's a lot of debate online about that. I'm in the camp that they were underwhelming, and I wrote about that on Monday. I just think when you're moving the goalpost to now saying, oh yeah, but they had four in the top 12, that's not good enough. I think in order for Liv to have won at the Masters, they need to have somebody, you don't have to win, but somebody part of the story on the back nine on Sunday, and they didn't have that. You had four guys as part of the story, I think. Yeah. And they didn't have one of them. So in my opinion, that was a shortcoming.
So I think in my head, I was in that camp of, like, if you only have 13 players entering, four of them are inside the top 10. That's, you know, pretty good going. Or four of them is inside the top 12, whatever it was, right? That percentage-wise is good. But it wasn't like last year. It wasn't like the time where Phil hit the round of the day, Brooks should have won, Reed was there in fourth place. Like, it wasn't in that same thing. I don't think that was anything to do with prep. I don't think that was anything to do with schedules. I just think for whatever reason, they didn't turn up this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Interesting that Hatton played so well on Sunday. Almost tried to do everything he could to not turn up again next year. Bryson, incredible for the most part. Disappointing, I guess, on Saturday. When you really got a chance to do something, but not a massive surprise that he faded, right? Like, it's not a course that he's been good at that before. He looks ready to kind of win one again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nothing negative I can say about Bryson last week. He finished T6, by far his best finish ever, and missed the cut the last two times he went there. He was just amazing. I think he's... the fact that he was able to do that on a golf course that doesn't suit him very well shows that he's going to win either the PGA or the US Open. I've already bet him at both at 50-1. I strongly believe he wins one of those two tournaments. And he's just amazing. I mean, he's so good for the game when he's around. People love him. People hate him. And that's fine. I like that people don't like him. Like, it makes golf fun. You can root against him. I'll root for him. Let's go back and forth. Like, let's make this exciting again. And we're missing that on the PGA Tour week in and week out. And I think we miss Bryson.
I do. I do really think, like, I tend to not care, I'll be honest. Like, unless it's someone that I've spoken to on the podcast. Like, for example, like, it's really good to see Ted Scott do so well because we've interviewed him on here before. It's, you know, Peter Uline's gone to live. I want to speak to him because, I've spoken to him a couple of times. I want to see how his results are. Other than that, not necessarily. I've completely avoided the Live versus PGA Tour debate over the last few months. It's tiresome. It bothers me that when, like, John Rahm doesn't play well, they say, oh, you know, yeah, this is what happens when you sell out. But let's not worry about the fact that Rory McIlroy's been shit there for the last, X amount of times. It's really boring. So don't worry too much about that. But it was this week where I go, do you know what? I actually miss watching Bryson play golf. Just because I loved him when he first came out. And he was the player that he was. I was really engaged with the distance that he found, whether that was going to work for him, all the kind of trials and tribulations that came with that, the feuds that came with that. And I respect him a lot to kind of go back on all of that and dial it back and change his game again. I do think Bryson's the one that changes things a little bit. Cam Smith is what he was, like, Augusta, very good there. Patrick Reed, never really saw anything of him, right? Like, he was just there. And then the rest were kind of disappointing. Brooks, obviously, mostly for me. So there's that. There's the Liv thing covered, I think. Probably not so much how badly DJ played. I was really surprised by that. I didn't think he was going to do well, but I was surprised just how poorly he played. Maronk, 14 over. Dustin Johnson, 13 over. Defending champions, 10-11 over. But then again, like, I think they don't talk about the fact that Thomas was 7 over, Hovland was 8 over, Spieth was 9 over. Like,
Clark and Harmon, the two defending Open champions.
By the way, of all the players to have a sudden rise in the game, Wyndham Clark might be the absolute worst at dealing with it.
Oh, my God.
And not in the sense of his golf game. I think he's actually dealt quite well with being a major champion and kind of delivered that win, whether I think he would have won it on Sunday or not. That's good to follow that up and contend in a couple of ways that he has. He needs to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he needs to stop talking, because what he does is, and this is not me saying it from a Live perspective of, like, I was offended by what he said or I care about what he said. He is just heaping way too much pressure on himself by saying something like that, and also just gives every one of these Live bots that people moan about the fuel, right?
Yep.
And just absolutely no point in doing that. Like, he could have just said nothing, and it was so forced. Like, the sentence itself was like,
it didn't make sense.
It made no sense. So he was like, I can't even remember, what did they ask him? Like, how are you going to match Bryson's 7-under, or how are you going to reach Bryson's 7-under, whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, well, we've still got 54 holes and they only play 54 holes. So, and it's like, that doesn't make any sense, because you're just talking about 54 holes twice. So it doesn't actually matter. And then he goes and shoots whatever he was, 6 or 7 over, and the next day he misses a cut. Like, you have to shut up, because actually I was quite impressed with how well he played on the first day. So from that perspective, disappointing comment from Wyndham Clark. Jordan Spieth just lost. Justin Thomas lost. Thomas not so much surprising at Augusta, but Spieth a little bit. Rory, we'll have the quick Rory discourse.
Yeah. I mean,
he's never going to win there.
No, and we didn't think he was going to win, and we said he wasn't going to. But as a Rory fan and person who bet him or whatever, again, which I'm not, but if I was, I would have been really happy with how things went going into the week. The visit to Harmon, a good finish the week before, gaining a bunch of strokes on approach, short with the media, doesn't do a big press conference, doesn't talk about live, shuts his mouth and plays. All those things were in his favor, and he still can't. There's nothing he can do to do well at this tournament. There just isn't.
And the pressure was off.
Yes.
I mean, of self-imposed pressure, fine. But, like, Rahm is a defending champion. Scotty was the standout favorite, expected to win it. Everyone was kind of talking about Brooks and all these people. Everyone was talking about Åberg and Wyndham Clark as you know, the best debutants we've ever had, sort of thing. That's not to say he didn't come with any pressure. That would be ridiculous to say, right? But it looked like he was going to cruise to a kind of 68-69 on Thursday, and he somehow turned it into a 71. And what did he? He was like level par on a par five, right? On the first day. I think he bogeyed second, birdied the eighth, and then was parred the 13th and 15th. It's just not good enough. It's not good enough. And I honestly, and this is going to segue into the next bit. Tommy Fleetwood, best finish he's ever had at Augusta. Had a local caddy on the bag. I don't think the two things, I don't think it's coincidental. I think there's a reason that Fleetwood had the best ever finish he's ever had there. And that's not to take away from Finno. I think Finno's a great caddy. I think he's done wonders with Fleetwood over the years. They're obviously very close. He's never, ever going to say, I don't want Finno there.
Yeah.
But he is, I think, proven what can happen when you have someone with the amount of local knowledge that that great guy had.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he's bogey-free on the final day. He was on Saturday.
He was great. I think on our show I mentioned that his history around Augusta was kind of underrated. Like he's always been in the mix, even though the finishes aren't there. So I do think it's a good course for him. And then the fact that he was able to get that local caddy, local knowledge, that's what Augusta is, right? Is knowing where you can miss it. And that's why Bryson hung around for a couple of days, because he was playing from where you can miss instead of trying to go at the pins. And that's all it's about. And I guess that doesn't really suit what Rory does.
But Rory, like there's nothing more juxtaposing, is that the word? Juxtaposing?
Juxtaposition, yeah.
Juxtaposition between Rory McIlroy playing with Scottie Scheffler. And one of them just looking completely at ease with what they're doing around Augusta, with a caddy that just knows exactly what he's doing. He's won there three times already. And a guy that is taking complete control of his game because he doesn't want to hear from his caddy. And that isn't a slight on Harry Diamond. Maybe you should let Harry Diamond give him some advice. I don't know. I don't know if it would be good advice or not. He's certainly not going to have much knowledge of Augusta, right? But it seemed to me that, like, when people humbled themselves over the past week, they did a bit better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somehow humbled himself on a Sunday, played good golf, stopped being so petulant until it got to the point where he wasn't. But Bryson, as you said, like, just found the right areas of the course. Homer's taken his, you know, licks and kind of figured it out. I just think Fleetwood going, do you know what, I'm not going to go and get a random stepping caddy. I'm not going to go and get another friend. I'm going to get someone that is actually going to have a meaningful impact on my game this week. He was in good form and he's taking control of it. And this just goes back, I guess, to what I said. If you just gave Rory Stevie Williams for 1 week, what would happen?
Yeah. I can't believe he hasn't tried something like that, but it's got to come at some point. But again, I don't think he's ever going to win a green jacket. It's too deep in his head now.
It just feels like Phil.
Yeah, it does.
US Open. And yep. Phil had 6 seconds, right?
Yeah, I said that actually on a different show this week. I said it reminds me of the same thing. It's just never gonna happen.
It's far more, because like if you have so many years of, like, everyone says about, like, the best thing about Augusta is it's so repeatable and that sort of stuff. But if you're repeatedly making the same errors every single year, that's a problem as well. You're not learning from it. Like, everything we were talking about is, I sort of said I was a little bit nervous that he kept coming out and was talking all the right things, like saying you have to be patient and not try and shoot 65 because you'll shoot 70, whatever he said. Like, he was all about being sort of playing within himself and being careful. And I guess to a certain extent he did that on the first day, right? Like, he didn't play himself out of it. He shot 71, but then just 77 on Friday. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. That was a tough day. scoring wise, and I guess I think tough, I guess, isn't really what Rory wants these days. I mean, he wants it soft.
And he hits it so high.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't, the conditions weren't ready for that. And he just needs a tournament where it gets to, everyone sort of says this is nonsense, it's not actually true. He needs a tournament where he's 20 under par. It's just going to play in his wheelhouse better.
Maybe Troon is that. Valhalla obviously is not the hardest PGA course we'll see in the last handful of years. So who knows?
Yeah, like I don't think he's going to go that much longer without a major. I just think he's going to go that much longer without a Masters win. Probably.
Agreed.
Enough negativity on Rory. Otherwise, I think he's kind of coming around to things, kind of focusing his attention in the right way. Live discussion, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, no. I mean, other than I was, people think I love Live or whatever, but I was disappointed with the results. I think they needed more. I thought Cam was pretty good. Which he's always, it just shows the guy can roll out of bed and finish top 10 at Augusta, which is amazing. He's another guy I really miss on the PGA Tour. So, I mean Bryson is.
Rory conversation.
Oh, the Liv. Oh, Rory Liv. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned on here, but I mean, I've been getting texts and things about Rory going to Liv for a very long time, and I haven't said anything about it that publicly or tweeted it because it just hasn't been solid enough. But it's just, I keep hearing it from different places, And then yesterday that story comes out. So I'm like, I guess it is happening. Everyone kept telling me after the Masters. And then the Monday after the Master comes, and then you get that story out. So it felt real to me. I know he came out and denied it today, but we've seen that before.
Does that mean anything? Like,
nah, I don't.
Like, there's not enough evidence to suggest that he's going. Like you just said there, you didn't feel comfortable sharing it because you didn't have enough solid information. It was kind of a lot of hearsay. That City AM report was, we reached out for comment, didn't hear anything back from anyone. And then the two things you've heard today are his agent and him both vehemently denying that he's going. So all you can do at the moment is just take him at his word. But he wouldn't be the first golfer to lie, and it's probably not the first time he would lie. Like, I'm pretty sure he's made comments before and gone back on them. I think if Jamie Weir tweets about it, I tend to believe even less, because I don't trust Jamie Weir at all. Just weird. Just a weird situation. I think if the one thing I would say is, I think if he goes, it's because it's to an accelerated merger. I think he goes thinking that he can be the difference maker. I think that's why Rahm went. I think Rahm thought he was going to be the instigator in it all, and that he would get the backing of Rory, which he did, and that would just bring everything closer together, and it obviously hasn't worked. I think that's why he's pissed off. I don't think it's necessarily just I missed the PGA Tour. I think it's I thought I was going to be a difference maker, and I'm not, and I took the money based on that. And I think Rory, if he took $850 million, would be purely to say, this is the official merging of the two. I'm going to play over here for X amount of tournaments. And we can all play together again.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with everything you said anymore. I think it's exactly right. I felt the same way when Rahm went. I thought that was going to be the piece. And for me, it was. I was like, okay, now we're going to get back together. This is how it's going to go down. And I agree, that's what Rahm thought. And that's why he's mentioning, to add on to your point, mentioning, oh, I kind of wish it was 72 holes. Because he thought we would have moved faster than the way it's moving right now. And he liked traditional golf. I think people are misconstruing that with him regretting signing. I don't think he regrets it. I think he just wants it to be accelerated.
I think there's regret, but I don't think it's regret that he's playing on Live or that he's being seen as this person that's taking money. I think it's just regret that he hasn't got what I think he was probably told he was going to get, which is, you're going to be the instigator, you're going to be this. Like, I think he just regrets the outcome of it and how he looks at the moment.
And I think originally it probably was going to go down that way, but I think Tiger becoming more involved really put a squash on that. And I think basically everyone's answering to him now. And I don't think that's a good thing for the sides to come together.
Yeah. Guess before we finally move on, word on Tiger, another made cut at Augusta. Are we even going to see him four times a year now?
I don't know, but I mean, it's pretty damn impressive to not even play golf the entire year, then go up there and do what he did.
It's quite damning, I think, like, of other people. Like, for him to just go and shoot 73, 72 on the first 2 days when he literally... I've never seen a man... Everyone talks about kind of like, I think it was like Robert Garrigus and people like that, that Tiger sweats with the best of them. Like,
yeah.
Because he's... Clearly, his body is so broken. And this guy still just goes and gets 73, 72 over the first 2 days. It blows my mind that the best in the world can't score that round there.
Yeah, I mean, everyone says he like looks... I mean, I think he looks horrific.
Oh, terrible.
He looks so bad.
Anyone that suggests that he's looking good, that he's ready to win, that he will do it again sometime, is completely lying to themselves. And I say that as someone that's probably a little bit later on in the Tiger era where I can kind of be a bit more objective rather than being massively infatuated with him. I don't like how much just like overwhelming support someone gets when there's a lot of questionable decisions in their life. With that all being said, he's an absolute hero. I just think that people just think that they saw 2019 and went, he did it once, he can do it again. And it's like 2019 was so different. He was like a top five player in the world, just won the tour championship. I mean, we said this before. Like, people were just so confused what that 2019 was. He was like 14 to 1 or something.
Yeah. I think it was like 20. I love Tiger. I absolutely love Tiger. I forgive all his transgressions. I'm a big, big Tiger fan. But he's a dead guy playing golf right now.
When I say, like, I don't like all the stuff that he's done, like, people, adults make mistakes. Like, it's not so much that. But it's like the dangerous situations that he's put himself in the last couple of times. And then we're just supposed
to... other people in, right?
Yeah, and then we're supposed to go, no, it's Tiger. Like, you, God, as long as you can play the Masters, we're all good. Like, and then, like, Phil Mickelson makes a comment. And look, Phil Mickelson does not help himself, and I'm not in
the form. Like, I love both, to be fair. I'm both a Phil and Tiger guy, so... I like flawed people. Maybe that's why I like Bryson, too, because he has all these flaws.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm just going to welcome them all soon.
Yeah, you got to welcome them all.
I'm getting old. I'm getting that way anyway. Not to say that you're old. Someone that is old, Jose Maria Olazabal. How good was he?
I thought him and VJ were both awesome. Yeah. I tweeted about this. I was able to bet a VJ over Tiger plus 150. I was like, that's stealing. Tiger's like, VJ's in much better shape than Tiger is. And the guy shoots even par on Sunday. That was just awesome. Yeah, Jose Maria is the best. Just so great.
Yeah, it was I think that's the only positive takeaway when things are slightly disappointing how things unfold, is that you still get to watch these kind of stories unfold. And I like the Masters is the only place that you can care about, like, BJ and Olazabal shooting level par and being really excited about it. Like,
yeah, too bad Langer wasn't there. That guy has tons of sacks, I bet. Yeah.
100%. Any more takeaways about this Masters before we go into the Irish, maybe to lead into the Heritage?
No.
Cool. Let's go to the Heritage then. Lo and behold, Matt, Scottie Scheffler 4-1 favourite. Whatever. I don't think he's going to win. Xander Schauffele 12-1. Ludvig Hubert 14-1, Rory McIlroy 16-1, Patrick Cantlay 16-1, Colin Morikawa 20-1, Tommy Fleetwood 20-1. American people that are listening, I'm just quoting the English odds here. We can convert them when Matt sort of gives his picks and vice versa. Matt, main interest from the top of the board.
Me, it's Cantlay. I actually woke up on Monday ready to fire a 14-16-1. That's what I thought it would be. And he, some reason, opened up at 25 on FanDuel. I got a little bit of that and a little bit at 22. I know he's down now. I'm going to tell the people out there looking to bet, I still would bet him. I think he's in the perfect spot of all that top range of players. His course history is incredible. He's 6 starts here. He's finished outside of the top 7 once. A couple runner-ups. He hasn't won it yet, so it makes me feel like he's even more due to actually win it. I think some of the good players on tour are going to have to start playing better, and I think he's the one who might be next in line. Decent Masters performance, not great, but enough to where I think he can come here and win.
So if I go back 15 years of just RBC Heritage form, and it's obviously factors in, you know, some people have only played one or two rounds, whatever, one or two events, whatever. Cantlay's got the best history here. Like third, seventh, third, one missed cut in the second and the third. His actual scoring average here is 68.32 and his adjusted scoring average is 67.46, which is, you know, rock star golf. I didn't get there. I didn't really get there, only in the sense of, like, I have a hard time thinking Cantlay's going to win ever, even though he's obviously capable of doing it. And then just to think that he's not quite at his best, just to me that I don't want to fire in on him. Maybe I'm just burnt by the fact that I got quite high on shorter price people last week. If I was going to pick anyone, as I said, it'd be Hubert at 14-1. I do like Tommy.
Me too.
I think he can. He's got to get this. The only thing that's playing on my mind a bit is he's got to get this PGA Tour thing off his back.
Yeah, he does. But this is the perfect place for him to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what's his 25th missed cut, 10th and 15th here. Staying with Lowry this week, which he'll obviously love. Even when he missed the cut, he went 76-65. When he was 10th, he shot third round 64. When he was 15th last year, he was 4th going into the final round, even after, you know, being 30th after day one. And then shot 71 on the Sunday. I think his season's actually been slightly underrated because he was so good last year. I think, like,
yeah, it's quite, he didn't play that much early in the year.
Yeah, like, I think it's quite easy to ignore the fact that he won in Dubai, followed that up with a 14th again at Dubai as a classic. Then he was 10th at the Rib. He was 10th. Yeah, 10th at Rib, and then just didn't play a lot. Like, and then all of a sudden finishes 7th and 3rd the last 2 weeks. I think he's in a position where things are going to go really well for him. Another one that I kind of looked at but didn't get to.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, you know, doing the show a bit later because he opened at 30-1. I bet that. I think he's gotten hammered down to what, like 18 now?
Yeah, 18, 20.
Jesus, like, I mean, yeah, that's tough.
You're not paying him at that, right?
No.
Is it just 30 and done, or do you think like 25?
I think 25 is okay.
Yeah. He just has to, like, he's far too good not to win. And I've always been in the camp of, like, you can't say that about anyone until they prove it. But, like, he's done it so many times on the PGA Tour. He's played so well in so many majors. I think he's evolving even now. Like, even though he's not having as many wins as he had for a decent period of his career, like, I think he's evolving into a more well-rounded player. He's benefited from being over on the PGA Tour more often. And I do just think it's going to happen for him, whether it's at 18-20-1 or whether we can wait a couple of weeks and he goes down to 33 because he's had a couple of mediocre finishes, I don't know.
I could see him winning a US Open, just the way he plays.
Yeah, I think I could actually see him winning any of the Opens. Maybe not the PGA. Like, but even where they're making the PGA these tougher, it's almost similar to the US Open courses now, right? Like, I think he can win.
Yeah.
Obviously, people are always going to look to him to the Open Championship, right? But I think he can win anything. Like, I think he's that good. So that's kind of the assessment at the top there. Colin, I think, is the one that was most hurt. Xander underwhelmed, I think, last week in the end. So not too interested in them. And then you've got this next group of golfers. Matt Fitzpatrick 25-1, Max Homa 28-1, Will Zalatoris 28-1, Cam Young 28-1, Siwoo Kim 33, Jordan Spieth 33, Wyndham Clark 33. You know, when I was just saying to you that Siwoo Kim was going to win RBC Heritage, like, we were talking about the Masters, like, I cannot bet that guy 33-1 when he's amongst all these players.
No, and he didn't even play well last week at the Masters when he usually does.
And, like, but he's like finishing 30th every week, and he's 33. I think people were so convinced that he was just going to at some point take off, but they're just willing to bet him any number now. And I know he's played well here in the past, right? Like, I get it, but he's had one really good finish here.
Yeah, he should have won.
Right? Like, he lost to Kodaira, and he was 14th on debut, then he was second, and he's missed three of those next five cuts at Heritage.
And yeah, I think the number's crazy.
And it coincides with Shonga Fields, no? Like, 42nd and missed cut the last 2 years. 33rd, 42nd missed cut just coincides with Shonga Fields.
Yep.
The guy's won the players, right? And he's played well in the majors. Like, I'm not questioning that he can't do it, but
it's the Pete Dye form as well.
Yeah, it's just not for me. Like, I'd not for me at all. Just go any one of those from Fitz, Homa, Zalatoris, Cam Young, Jordan Spieth, maybe not Jordan Spieth, and Wyndham Clark, I'd rather bet. And this is being very negative on Wyndham Clark. Cam Young for you, Matt.
Yeah, I like Young. It's not as much like a golf course fit as it's just I think he's playing so well right now, and he did exactly what I wanted him to do last week. Came in ninth, but never really contended. And he's kind of weirdly played well on shorter courses.
Yeah. Feels very much like DJ in that.
Yes. Respect. Yeah.
Like a DJ Woodland-esque player. I think they both do that right.
And he finished third here a couple of years ago, so.
I think he's just perfect. Like, he can send it. The fairways are not narrow, right? Like, they're relatively wide, and it's the greens are obviously the problem here. They're small. But, I did look at Cam Young. I think, again, a little bit like Fleetwood, I think they're both. Like, I would be very surprised if one of those two doesn't win this year and doesn't break their duck. If they both go winless, then so be it. It's kind of happened. But yeah, was definitely close to him as I was with Fleetwood as well. Cool, we're going away here. I guess the next guy up, I'm going with Shane Lowry. There's still a 40-1 over here in the UK with 888.com. He was fifth. So I was posting the article that I posted on Oddschecker, Matt. In the US, he was 55-1 when I was posting it. As I sort of hit publish, he went to 45. So I felt like I'm not going to put a price up. I was only there for 30 seconds when I hit the button. I thought the 45 was still generous. I thought he was going to be 33-35-1. His course form here is ridiculous. 44th in debut, but he opened with a 66 and a third round 69. Then he was third on his second start with his 36 hole leader. He did miss one cut. He shot second round 67 to bounce back from the 74. Finished ninth the following year. He had 65 and 66s. Third 2 years ago when he was second going into the final round. And then he was 67th last year. Now, the encouragement about Shane Lowry is that his problem last week was that he led the field in approach and he was 60th in putting. Like, I think most people know that, right? When I looked back at his history here, apart from last year where he missed the cut, where he finished like 67th, and he was horrendous. He's gaining strokes and putting here almost every time. And when you actually look at his season so far and go back to the sort of tail end of last year, I don't think there's actually going to be a long-term problem with this putter. I think he's just going to be volatile with it. And I think that's pretty Shane Lowry-esque, right? Like, if you look at it, he lost almost 1.8 strokes per round putting last week at the Masters. He lost over 2 strokes per round at the Amex. He lost nearly a stroke around, or nearly 0.8 strokes around at Phoenix, and that's where he's been terrible. And then he's gained almost a stroke around in the Cognizant. He's gained almost 0.4 per round at the Arnold Palmer, and he's just kind of back and forth. And I just think he's going to come back to court, greens that he likes, and just play well. And I think if he just keeps hitting it the way he's hitting it, then he's going to give himself opportunities. He's going to live and die by that putter. And at 40-1, I'm willing to find out.
Yeah, completely agree. I was refreshing once I saw he got the exemption and he wasn't listed on any betting sites. I was refreshing over and over and over again, waiting to bet him. Yeah. And crazily, they dropped it 75-1 when he first got entered into the field. And he was 75-1 for a couple of hours on Monday morning. And so I was able to bet a bunch. I found every website I could that had a 75 and bet it. Yeah. So I have a large piece of that 75. And I agree with you. I think 40 is fine. I totally expected it to be 35-1.
If you'd opened it up and it was 40, would you still bet it and put it up?
Yes, I would have.
Good. So then we're in the same page where we think he's a really good.
Yeah, it's crazy to say this. He's first in my model, and I don't go, obviously I don't live and die by it, but this is the first time Scheffler hasn't been first in Lowry's, because so all the things in here that I think matter, he's in the top 5-7. Approach, he's top 5. Greens and reg, he's top 5. Good drive percentage, he's second. Pete Dye, he's 7th. Course history, he's 12th. Short game on Bermuda, he's 21st. Just everything that I want a player to do, he does. And if he makes the putts, he makes the putts. And, people ask, can he win? Is he capable of winning? I do think he's capable of it. And it's just a variance. He's gotten bad breaks. He's played poorly on Sundays. But I don't think there's anything mentally for him that prevents him from playing well on a Sunday.
I think there is a bit, like I've said this in the past, so I don't want to completely walk it back. Like, I think there is a bit of a mental thing, but I think it's a mental thing at like he's had two opportunities, really good opportunities at the Honda and like got in water. And I think there's a bit of scar tissue at that specific course, right? I think here, like, he's been within twice now. He's been within one going into Sunday and maybe just not played his best stuff. And that happens to the best golfers in the world, right? Like, it happens to everyone. And, you know, Colin Morikawa, this absolute killer coming out of the thing, he was terrible on Sunday last week. Like, it's as simple as that. I don't want to give up on him. I think when you're like we are, Matt, and you're into the golf stats as you are week in, week out, it's just so hard to ignore a player of his profile. You do have to scope out and have a gut instinct of whether he can win. I think he can. I think him and Tommy will spur each other on, and it could be a really good week for both of them.
Yeah, get me this. I say about it every week, and I feel that way, especially this week. Get me in with Fleetwood, with Lowry, and with Young. Get me in that spot on Sunday, and then let's roll the dice and see what happens.
But like, that's, I just think at some point Cam Young's going to trip into a win. And
yeah,
that's good. Lowry doesn't even have to do that because he's already proven that he can win a major, a WGC, the very best tournaments on the DP World Tour. So he has nothing actually to prove. He's just, and he always, I wonder if you'd asked him whether he feels like there is a monkey on his back that he hasn't done it over the last couple of years. Like, I'd love to see his kind of, I don't think he does. It doesn't strike me as someone that he does. He seems pretty late.
He'd probably say no, I think.
Yeah. Whether, again, that's the truth or not, I don't know. But all I care about is what he believes. So, and you can't really second guess him. So, you know, 40 to 1 in the UK, he's 45 to 1 still, BetMGM in the US. I think Shane Lowry for me is, I wasn't going to include him. And the reason I wasn't going to include him, Matt, is because I've got four players at 66 to 1 and bigger. But I felt like if I included him, it meant I couldn't take one from the top of the board. But in the end, I was just like, do you know what? I'll have five and take my shot.
I completely agree. And if I had to reassess with the current odds start now, my first bet would probably be him at 40 or 45.
I like it. Corey Connors for you at 50 to 1, Matt.
Yeah, I've bet him here in the past a couple of times. I think it's a really good course for him. He's another guy who I question. You know, I know he's gotten it done in Texas a couple of times, but he's not the guy you feel most comfortable with on a Sunday at all. Bad putter, but otherwise, this is a positional golf course. Like, even if you're not missing the fairway, you want to be on the right side of the fairway to set up angles into the hole, Pete Dye. I just think it's a good course for him.
Yeah, I don't have that faith in Corey Connors. I think it's like, I think you nailed it. Like, he's had the two wins in the same place. Like, Matt Every had two wins in the same place. And yeah, Look, they're not the same. That's a very extreme example. But, like, I think you can get comfortable with somewhere. And if you've done it once, you can do it again. I don't think that necessarily is indicative of his winning form. I think I would love to see it from him again. He's such a good ball striker. He's so good at golf that at some point he's got to fall into another win. And I'll probably just wait and see on that. I guess, Matt, probably a good time to sort of reflect on the top of the DraftKings board before we go any further into kind of deeper picks and just sort of cover the sort of players. I guess the ones that we've mentioned already, would you mix all of them into lineups? Or is there something that you
I would. I'm definitely starting with Cantlay. I agree with you on Olberg. I think of the top players, he's the most likely to – he's young. He doesn't care. He wants to come in. He wants to prove himself. Like, he's the one least likely to have a Masters hangover. Scheffler, I would not play. Have I said that in the past and it's burned me? Sure, but I'm not gonna back down on that. Especially, I'll say this: I'd be more surprised if he won this event than I would be if he won the Masters, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. He doesn't want to play it. I think it's a bad look to play this event the week after the Masters, like, to force players to do it. Did Rory not play it last year and get fined like $3 million or something? Was that last year?
That's right. Yep.
It's just not going to end well. Like, keep getting players to do this. And
I think it's good for us bettors, right? Because it gives us some value on these other guys.
Like, I don't want to bet either of those two guys or three guys at the top of the market, really. But Hobert, as you said, was the closest. So I like the players that we've spoken about. Maybe not so much for me, Corey Connors, but for the others that we've kind of mentioned so far. And the list that I kind of put together to start my lineups, and this will all then get finished by kind of the I hate doing this, including all my betting picks, but I'm going to do it in this instance. Hobert at 10-4, Fleetwood 9-8, Shane Lowry at 8-5, and then my three next bets I'm going to talk about will follow that lineup, which hopefully people will make sense. But I think that's such a strong start. I know it's all European.
It's a good European spot.
Yeah. And it's just the way they're playing, right? Like, you know, we're talking about the PGA Tour players that are playing well and showing up. They're the guys that are doing it, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Next for me, I really didn't. I talk about I wasn't sure I wanted to do it with Shane Lowry. I really didn't want to do this, but I've been suckered into this Cam Davis thing. He's better than I think I give him credit for. I never really think about the Rocket Mortgage win that he's got. He's been tied 21st or better in five of his past six starts. He was great at Augusta last week. He's not in any top tens in that time. Like, he seems to be able to just fall short of it. But again, you know, T12 at Augusta is really good. He was inside the top six for the first three rounds. Two of his top 10 best finishes ever, according to OWGR, coming to his golf course, third in 2022 and seventh last year. Third come down to a final round 63, but last year bounced back from a reasonably slow start to go 67, 66, 68, post another top 10. And even on his debut, he was 25th as well. So he just loves this golf course. Led the field in approach at Pebble Beach, sixth in the same category at Bay Hill, 12th in approach last week. Hitting his irons really good. Finished fourth in the PGA Championship, sixth in the Players, 12th at Augusta. I don't think the strong field is necessarily going to faze him. And actually, when I come into my next pick, I think there's a little bit of correlation with the Rocket Mortgage. I don't know why there would be. I don't necessarily know what would do that, Matt. And maybe, you know, you sort of think about it, you might know. But like, when you look at it, Cam Davis has picked up his sole win at the Rocket Mortgage, and he plays so well here. Cantlay's been second at both events. You could just attribute that to Cantlay being very good at golf. Cam Young's been second there and third here. Bryson won the Rocket Mortgage, third here. Troy Merritt, second behind Davis at the Rocket Mortgage, third here. Kevin Kisner, top three in both events.
Neiman has a top three in both events.
Correct.
Yeah.
So when you start adding Merritt, Kisner, Davis alongside Cantlay, Bryson, and Cam Young, and maybe even Neiman, it starts, I think, it's a very short period of time for that much crossover, I think.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, I guess one thing I would think is, like, both Donald Ross courses and Pete Dye courses have some tricky around the green areas.
And Wyndham, like, there's always a correlation between, like, the Wyndham and things. That's, like, everyone thinks of a Wyndham as, like, a Pete Dye, but it's Donald Ross, and maybe it's just that.
Yeah, I think that could be it.
So, anyway, so that's the Cam Davis spill. And the other player I think is backing out is Taylor Moore. I think Taylor Moore's, I don't think he's been overlooked when you look at the one of the most bet people. He's one of them, but he's not missed a cut since last year's Open. So that's 15 straight events where he's made the cut. He's now turned that, Matt, into these. I always want to see what people start doing with that consistency. Like, if they just keep finishing, a little bit like Seaward Kim, they keep finishing 30th and 20th, it's not really any good to you. But 12th at the Valspar, 2nd in Houston, where he was one shot shy of Stephen Yeager. And then he was always in the mix, top 20 last week. Always in the mix for a top 20 at Augusta last week. He was inside the top 30 after every round. Open for 71, close with a 70 on a course that wasn't giving up a lot. Just seems to be playing really well. That the only concern with it is that he's not doing it like with his irons. He's doing it off the tee and around the greens, which may not be sustainable. But if his irons come back like they did, I mean, he was brilliant at the Valspar with the irons. If he can just find that this week, adding that to his 11th place finish here last year, which again, I think was more to do with kind of like around the green and putting than it was anything else. I think that's a really good spot for Moore to get his second win. Like, he was fourth going into the final round last year.
Yeah, I think great cases on both those guys. The Davis one for me, I thought about him long and hard just because and he's so great on these Pete Dye courses. It's just hard for me, and this might be wrong considering all the top players are in a weird spot this week. It's just hard for me to see them winning, you know, in this elevated event. But I know, but I think it, maybe it's in my head that it's something that it shouldn't be.
I think you just got to think about, like, would we have thought Wyndham would have won a elevated event when he won it? Like,
yeah,
Keegan wins the Travelers, like, Kitayama won Bay Hill, like, potentially right. Putting a lot into it, right? I mean, who's won them this year?
Clark won at Pebble. Who won at Riviera? Decky.
But like, they weren't necessarily, like, they are excellent players, but they weren't necessarily expected to do what they did, and how they did it was relatively surprising. I mean, Deki wasn't playing well, right? I mean, that's why you got him at the number you got him at. So I think when I factor in, like, someone like Davis, and this is where UK listeners versus US listeners will get, like, when I talk about Cam Davis at 66-1, I'm talking about him getting like six each way places with that, or seven each way places at 70-1, whereas like 66-1 win only might be tough in the US. And it's the same for Taylor Moore, 66-1, seven places. Like, I think factoring in that I think they can finish inside the top seven is definitely in my thinking.
Yeah.
I want to believe they're going to win 100%. Like, I wouldn't bet them, I don't think, at 66-1 if I didn't. But yeah, I think that's a maybe a slightly important distinction of more of our regular listeners, Matt.
Yeah, I think that's completely right. I think both those guys have a great chance to do that. And I do think they could win too, yeah.
Yeah. Who else was on your betting card?
Last one was Glover. I got 120-1.
Got you. Is that just, you just thought that the price was too big for how he's been playing?
Yes, I think the price is too good for how he's playing. I think he's a little bit disrespectful. I think he, this is a good golf course for him. He's a Carolina guy. His history's been up and down. He's played it over 20 times. But you know what? His history is really similar to Stuart Sink's after he won.
Yeah.
So I kind of had that, you know, week after a major, he's still hungry. He had his best finish ever at the Masters last week. So I just think he's an old dude who could win. This course really is a great equalizer for guys who are older and shorter off the tee.
Yeah, I've tried the Glover thing already. I think it was the Valspar that I was on Glover, and didn't go so well. But I mean, he finished 11th, so it wasn't terrible, right? But yeah, hitting his irons well is what you want to see coming into the Heritage. Final two picks for me, Keegan Bradley, man. I just think, I don't know if you've seen it. Like, I haven't really been talked about this week.
No, I haven't seen it.
So his finish last week at Augusta was the tied best he's ever done, 22nd. He did the same in 2015. So I think that's important. Yes, it came from a fine around 69, but also he opened with 78 and he was, you know, 80th after round one. That's a sort of rally to make the cut. I think that's always impressive. When you look at his course history, it reads missed cut 44, 48th. The missed cut was in 2011. I think it was his first year on tour. I know he obviously won, but I think it's important the first go around here. In 2017, he opened with a 75. He was 125th, Matt, after round one, but then shot a second round 66, third round 68 to climb into the 31st going into Sunday, and just had a bad Sunday. And then last year, again, started slow, 73, 109th after round one, but then shot 67, 64 in the two middle rounds, was 16th going into the final round. He's had 2 6-year gaps between his three appearances here. Which suggests to me that he just didn't ever really want to play it. But he's got to play now. It's an elevated event. We saw, again, it's a little bit of a feel thing, but he, you know, reacted the best after, you know, a major last year. He missed the cut of the US Open, then goes and wins the Travelers. I just think, as a player that I think it should suit his skill set, I'm willing to roll the dice. His approach play at the Masters last week was his best since winning the Travelers. He's had a couple of good weeks at the FedEx, the Century, with his irons, but this was the standout performance since that went to Travelers. He's already been second in Hawaii. And when you look at his form this year, man, I like reading this off sort of data golf. You look at the putting. So when he's gained strokes, he's finished second in Hawaii, 11th in Pebble, 36th at Bay Hill, 22nd last week at the Masters. When he's lost strokes putting, 45th at the Century, 43rd at the Farmers, missed cut at Riviera, missed cut at the Players, missed cut the Valspar. It's going to come down to his putting. The reason I'm okay with that is that he's gained strokes every year that he's played at the RBC on the greens. So I think it's quite encouraging that actually somewhere that he's not enjoyed playing, it's normally, if you think he's had an off week, it's going to be because he's been terrible with his putter, right? But that's not been the case here. He's actually not been as good with his irons. Now, he was sixth in approach last week, as I said, best approach play since that win. I think it's sneaky that he's, you know, gaining strokes putting when every time he's played it, one of them was like 0.01, you know, like per round. But like, just the fact that he's not lost strokes here ever surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, another thing you can add to that, he's a good Pete Dye player. Yeah. Travelers is Pete Dye. Yeah.
He's 100-1. Like, I thought that was a bit big. Like, for someone that's already finished second this season, I'm not talking about a guy that's been dead and just had a decent week last week. He's had a couple of good finishes when he's got the putter wrong.
Yeah, and he's 19th in my strokes gained total at Pete Dye courses. Nice. Per round. So I think, yeah, I think it's a good one. It's sneaky.
And then the final one, Adam Svensson, who I was ready to give up on, but like the first event that you kind of link this to is the RSM.
Yep.
He's obviously won that. Struggled a lot at the start of the season, but he had a third round 64 at the Sony, 10th at Riviera. He missed three cuts after that, but the last three starts, 49, 57, 51st, don't look great on paper, Matt. But when he was 49th for the Valspar, he was third after round 1/8 after round 3. When he was 57th in Houston, he was 6th after round 1, 22nd going into the final day. And then last time in Texas, he opened with 69, 8th after round 1, and he closed with a 67 to, you know, make up for two really poor rounds. There's just been flashes of really good stuff. He's changed his caddy. He's enjoying sort of two good rounds every week, basically, at the moment. And that's what happened here in 2022. He opened with a 66, sit third after round 1, posted a 67 on Saturday, bad Friday. And then he was 13th going to Sunday and just fell away. I think he's got something that suggests that he can do it. And like people talk about the Wyndham and the Sony Open, he's got 7th place finishes both of those, 5th at the RSM and a win. I think at 200-1 he was too big.
I hope you're wrong with the RSM correlation, because that scares me about Åberg this week.
Well, this is what I mean. This is why I liked him so much. Like, where is he so well? And it makes sense. It makes sense that it's kind of that type of event where he can go and birdie all these holes.
Yeah.
I think that's concerning. And that's why I just think, like, my lineup I put together here, a Bear, Davis, Fleetwood, Lowry, Moore, Svensson, I just think it's really solid. Like,
it is solid, yep.
I think that's really, really solid. You could mix in Keegan there. I think he's going to be relatively ignored based on his course history, which, to be fair, correlates to a lot of success here. So the one thing I would you know, to give a negative on my own pick would be that has been important in the past. But I think he's the type of player that can overcome it.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the picks a lot. And I think those are good, because I didn't really have too many cheaper guys on DraftKings. So I think the guys that you mentioned as your best seem like pretty good plays.
So let's just very quickly sort of recap each price range, right, in DraftKings. So we've sort of overlooked that a little bit this week. We're not playing Scheffler. Like, you can't play Scheffler, right, unless you're adamant he's going to win, because it makes it so hard to do anything else. 7-3 for the rest of your golfers.
Yeah, or unless for some reason nobody plays him, which won't happen. So no, I don't think you can play him. I don't know why you'd play Rory either.
I'm not playing Rory. I don't want to play Xander. Like, if he wins, fine. I don't need to watch it. So that you could start with. Do you think starting with, I hate pronouncing his name, starting with a Bear and Cantlay, do you think that's going to be a popular way to go?
No, I don't think it'll be too popular. I think that's fine.
So I think that's a definite route. Then you could have Lowry in as your third guy. You could probably have. Let's see. If we put Svensson in there, we know what else we can do. 72.50 for the next two. So you can have Taylor Moore and a 7,100 guy. What about Pavon? Is he just really good at golf now?
Yeah, I don't know. He's not for me.
But he's cheap.
Yeah, I mean, he is. I'd rather play Glover at 6,800.
There you go. So you can make a lineup there where you go Bear and Cantlay, we get two probably your favorite guy at the top of the board, right? The Bear, who I think is just really dangerous. Lowry, who we've both agreed is our favorite bet of the week. Taylor Moore, who I think is just an incredible run of golf. And then you've got Glover and Svensson propping out.
Yeah. Do you like Moore better than Davis?
I think it's a tough one. Like, I think in terms of winning upside, I think that Moore might have more. But I think Davis actually is probably the steadier one. But I think you're getting the steadiness from Åberg, Cantlay, and Lowry.
Yeah. Of the two, they're both 7,400. I prefer Davis, so I'll be the tiebreaker there.
There you go. Davis is. Let's just have a look at some kind of... I think the other guys, like, if we've passed them up in the betting board, like, I don't feel the need to talk about Thigala in DraftKings. I'm not going to talk about Justin Thomas. Like, I'm, if I'm not talking about them, I've got no real interest. Just want to have a look at this guy's current form. 30th last week. What do we do with Poston? 6th, 8th, 3rd here, and then 2 miscuts. So, really good course history. Type of course that he does like. 30th at the Masters last week. Solid enough.
Yeah, I can see it. He obviously likes the... He's the corollary course guy for sure. The guy cheap who I was looking at, really cheap, 6,100 with Seamus Power. He's flashed up a little bit on some of these events recently, and this is a course that should be right up his alley.
Seamus Power. Didn't he play well at the RSM before?
I think he did.
Like he nearly... Did he not finish behind Abo?
Maybe he did.
You're making it up, so let's just have a look. I do make things up. It appears that goes into the list of things that I've made up. let's just have a look if he's actually ever played well at the RSM. Yeah, he has. He's finished 4th and 5th there, so I wasn't making
that's
that
good.
Up. And 3rd at the Sony Open, which we like, right, for this.
Yeah, I mean, all these courses. And he's shown some... He's finished T6 here in 2019.
If there's anything that Rocket Mortgage thing, about 8th and 12th.
Wow. And he's been good here, so... He was bad last year, but he's in shit form. Now he's shown some flashes. I mean, he's 28th at Valspar, short of course, 21st at API this year. So he's showing some flashes. I would play him at 6,100 if you're looking for somebody down there.
I mean, the one thing I would say, I know he's flashed, generally speaking, has been shit, which is why he's 6,100, right? But you have to at some point take a swing on something like that. Like if you're playing Scotty, he's the perfect remedy.
Yeah, I mean, at Valspar, he was in the mix. He was 68, 69, 68, and then he shot 76 on Sunday. But it just seems like a perfect
spot. Going into the final round of Valspar. That's,
yeah.
Right? And also, 2 rounds of 69 at the Players, which sounds pretty good, right? So
I have another question. Why is Mackenzie Hughes so cheap?
He hates it here, doesn't he?
Does he? I mean, it seems like he plays a correlated course well.
He's won the RSM.
He's won the RSM. His last 2 starts are 3rd and 14th.
Miscut, 63rd, 70th, 52nd, miscut.
That's probably why. There you go.
That'll do it. And I think that is one where if you see that 5 or 6 times over, you probably can't ignore it at the RSM. I really like this Seamus Power thing. I'm going to have a look at what number he is to bet.
I might bet him a top 20 or something.
I need to stop talking to you about golf because I don't generally just lose money because of what you tell me, but...
I have an effect on people.
Seamus Power. So we have a Betfair exchange over here, Matt, which just means you kind of just bet against other people. He's 490-1 on that.
Why the hell not? It's the price of a pack of gum.
Yeah.
Let's see what he is top 20. I'm going to give that out as a pick here on my, somewhat on my betting. Not quite debut, but 5-1 for a top 20 in a 60-man field.
Doesn't make sense, does it? Do you know you could we're not going to take on Shane. I was going to say we could maybe just bet him like top Irish or something, just take on Rory, but that's not going to work.
I love that. If it was better than top 20, I would. Oh yeah, we have Lowry. That's right.
Yeah, Shane's power is 9-1 to be top Irish.
I don't mind it. I do not mind it. Let's see the top. I'm going to find the best top 20.
Say what you need, Matt, because I'm going to write my first round leader article immediately after this thing, and I think he's going to go in there.
Yeah. You gotta go a hat tip though. 450. He's 450 on FanDuel for a top 20. That's my bet that I'm giving the people this week.
For the people. I wonder what that is. I just convert that into odds over here. I'm guessing it's probably sort of similar. 6-1 over here, Matt, for a top 20.
Good. There you go.
So Seamus Power, 6-1 top 20. Interesting bet that. I mean, it's bigger price that Seamus Power finished in the top 20 than Scotty Scheffler wins. So there you go.
Yeah.
Matt, Seamus Power.
There we go. I talked myself into it.
Now we've got to put another line in, though, because now we've got to do one that starts Seamus Power, Adam Svensson.
Yeah, because then we get some money. We get some money to blow.
Would you then want to put Scheffler in?
No. No. I just want to get Tommy in there, maybe.
So you can go... I've pronounced his name about 5 or 6 different ways. You can have Ludwig, Cantlay, Fleetwood, Power, Svensson, and then someone at 7,100.
Yep. And then you can, who's even Glover or
Glover. Schenk, 7,100. Isn't he playing well?
Yeah.
Adam Hadwin cheaper, 6,700.
Yeah, it is pretty cheap. I don't know if he likes it here, but
Hadwin has finished. No, not really. 22nd and 26th is two of the best starts. There is some weird prices. Like Austin Eckroach just won a tournament at 6,400.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that's it, Matt. Before you talk me into any more money spent, I'm going to summarise my betting picks from a UK betting perspective. So the people that are listening for that reason get to hear that. So it's 40-1, seven places each way for Shane Lowry. Taylor Moore, 66-1, seven places each way. I've also gone with Cam Davis at 60-1, seven places. I think is probably the best way to play him. Actually, you can get, yeah, that's definitely the way to do it. Keegan Bradley's 80-1, and you can have seven places on that as well. And then the final pick for me is Adam Svensson, who's not quite the fancy 200-1 that he is in the States, but that's obviously win only. He's 150-1, seven places over here in the UK. Matt, you have gone with Patrick Cantlay, 16-1 each way is the best price over here now. You'd still play him at that price, correct?
Yes.
Fleetwood, you're not playing at 20-1 now.
I would not play him at 20. It has to be 25 or better.
Cool. I think you probably get that win only on the exchange. Shane Lowry now down to 40-1, still playing.
Yep.
Corey Connors, 50-1.
Yep.
Cam Young, 28-1 each way.
Yeah, originally was 35, 33. I think 28 is still fine, especially if you don't bet the Tommy. I would take that Cam Young.
Yeah, like if you're getting 28-1, seven places as well. Like I think that's pretty generous.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really good because I think he's a very high chance of coming in the top seven.
Yeah. And then final pick for you, Lucas Glover. There's actually been some steam on Lucas Glover, Matt.
Has there?
In the UK, he's now 80-1 best price, but that's only five places. He's 70-1 six places, 60-1 seven places. Lucas Glover, popular. Don't know who's.
I think I'd pass on that one.
Is that you? Is that your fault?
It could be. I mean, I've been accused of it, but I at that price, I mean, part of the reason I bet it was because 120-1, 80, 70. I'm not interested really anymore. I don't think he's gonna win.
There you go. And then we've given our DraftKings plays.
And then so, you get the Seamus Power top 20.
Plus. Seamus Power top 20, 6-1 Skybet over here, plus 450 you said on FanDuel in the US.
Yeah.
I think that's really smart. Would you also play that top Irish just in the hope that the other guys don't? Or would you just go to top 20 and don't worry about it?
Yeah, because then you don't have to beat anybody.
We're not trying to take on one of the best players of a generation and one of the best players that we think can win.
I'll take on Rory. I just don't want to take on Shane because I think he really might win.
I think Shane can definitely win. They're going down to top 30 finish in the 70-man field. Seems a bit strong.
Yeah.
Seamus is 2-1 for a top 30.
Not bad.
He's not got to do it, has he?
No.
Have you done any first round leaders this week?
No, I've been going away from them. I haven't really been hitting them lately and just burning money in my pocket. And I think it's a good trade and a bad trade, but I can't. Suggest anyone bet anything without myself betting it. And
so people will find that admirable.
Yeah.
Because that should be how you do it. And I don't feel good if I don't bet something that I've told other people to bet. I produce an article for it weekly, so I would have to put it out. It's really weird. Like I'm always really positive about first round leader. I always think that there's more to it than people suggest, rather than it just being random. But it's been so hard this year.
It's going to make me go bankrupt. So whatever I get paid to write these articles, I'm losing triple that on the first round leader. So I got to stop doing them.
Yeah, and I need to probably stop doing in-house articles so I actually do get paid for writing them. I think that's it. Thanks for coming on. It's obviously a late one on a Tuesday night here in the UK. It's now 11:30. So people listening in the UK will obviously get this a little bit later than normal. Hopefully you wake up on a Wednesday with a cup of coffee and listen to this on your commute. The US guys, it's still 6:30, right?
So yeah, 6:30. It's worth the wait for everybody, though. It was a good one.
It was a good one. It's you know, an enjoyable one. It's always good when we get to talk golf. There's still some discourse to come, Matt, I think. There's still some stuff to unpack. That's not betting stuff, not DraftKings stuff. I think we wait until there's some final outcomes on this Rory stuff, maybe. And then we unpack some stuff before the next major, I think.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
Cool. Matt, thanks as ever. I really appreciate you logging on late. And I look forward to winning with Seamus Power this week.